You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Severe winter weather sharply tightened U.S. energy supplies, driving a record drawdown in natural gas storage while lifting heating and power costs across much of the country. Now, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, working natural gas stocks fell 360 billion cubic feet for the week that ended January 30th. It's the largest withdrawal ever recorded. The pool, nearly 90% larger than the five-year average for the same week, pushing inventories to slightly below normal seasonal levels. Winter Storm Fern, it stretched from New Mexico to New England. It boosted heating demand while freezing wellheads and pipelines along the Gulf Coast. Residential and commercial consumption surging nearly 29% above normal, while production dropped due to freeze-offs and shut-ins. Combination tightened supplies quickly. Prices reacted immediately, with the Henry Hub benchmark climbing to $9.03, more than doubling week to week and running over $5 higher than a year ago. Higher natural gas prices, though, rippled through ag, with energy costs for irrigation, nitrogen fertilizer production, and also grain drying. Well, farmers may still face wider basis swings and higher marketing risk as U.S. grain storage expansion has effectively stopped while crop production continues to grow. Economists at the University of Illinois are warning the imbalance could create bottlenecks across the supply chain from farm bins to export terminals. Between 2000 and 2019, national storage capacity increased about 350 million bushels annually, closely matching production growth. But since 2020, capacity has barely increased, only about 337 million bushels total in 6 years, even as large crops return. The 2025 harvest, it pushed storage utilization to some of the highest levels in decades, with on-farm bins about 80% full as of December. Higher utilization increases the risk that transportation disruptions like, well, low Mississippi River levels will amplify local price discounts. Farmers are increasingly carrying more grain on farm, shifting the storage responsibility away from elevators while investment in new infrastructure slows. So analysts are pointing to higher construction costs, elevated interest rates, and uncertain returns as reasons for the stalled expansion. Grain movement remains active, though, across export channels, but uneven demand and rising fuel costs are shaping marketing opportunities heading towards spring delivery windows. Railroads originating 27,733 grain carloads for the week that ended January 31st. That's 9% higher than last year and 6% above the three-year average. Secondary shuttle bids dropping sharply week to week. It signals adequate railcar supply. River traffic improving, but again, remaining historically weak. Bargoed grain totaled 265,900 tons. It's up 40% from the previous week, but still 57% below a year ago. It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We still have a whole lot of optimism that we're going to see additional business with China.
Ted Seifert is Vice President, Zahner Ag Hedge.
You know, go back a week ago, we had the social media tweet or post from President Trump saying that he had a very good conversation with President Xi, and they specifically talked about soybeans and that China was considering an additional 8 million metric tons of soybeans for this marketing year. Since then, we've seen one flash of its sale. I think it was 224,000 metric tons. They are on holiday. They have been on holiday this week. So nothing new this week. But there were some little tiny news bits kind of throughout the week of a Chinese news agency reporting that Trump and Xi might lift tariffs for up to a year. So there is still a lot of optimism that China might buy above and beyond that 12 million metric tons, even getting up to 20 million metric tons. And that has caused a change in the market. You've seen a lot of strength in soybeans since the day of that True Social post or tweet. And we've really been able to hold on to that, kind of culminating into Thursday's trade, where we had the highest close that we've seen of the calendar year, really going back well into last year. So that optimism remains. Now, the question, Tony, is, has this really just been short covering from, you know, commercials and funds and, you know, short speculators on the possibility? Or is this a fundamental change in the market? And that's the thing that we're now going to be trying to figure out going forward. We had export sales this last week, which were really poor. They were below the low end of trade guesses. And while China was on there, they were really the only country that was for any sort of size. And, you know, the strength that we've seen in the markets is based on China buying. Well, if China buys, that's great. But also, we've kind of left Brazil prices in the dust, and the rest of the world might now start to focus on Brazil. So the question is, if China does buy that 8 million metric tons, well, that is the first question. Will China buy that 8 million metric tons or a portion of that or whatever? And if they do, does that preclude the rest of the world from doing any business with us because now we're at higher prices than Brazil and that offers a better opportunity for them elsewhere? So we're trying to work through all that on a balance sheet. And, you know, as we go forward through the next few weeks, it's sort of our atypical time frame to be, you know, doing a whole lot of soybean business anyways. But we'll be watching these daily flash sales or the possibility for daily flash sales very closely to see if China's involved. We'll be watching our weekly export sales and basically trying to determine if the strength of the rally that we've seen off of the low is justified or if we're going to be disappointed ultimately and start headed back down. What I will say is the timing of this is very interesting because it may be trying to encourage some sort of last-minute switching of acreage towards soybeans. The optimism of China buying, the optimism of China buying maybe more than the 25 million metric tons they've agreed to for next year could be swaying some decisions. And I have this sort of, I don't know, itching question that I have in my mind, Tony, is we talk about how China likes to game the system and game the market. Is this them using this timing to try to insulate soybean planting in order to insulate soybean production for next year so that they don't have to be worried about whether there's a shorter crop in Brazil or whether we have a shorter crop next year? Is this them sort of trying to talk the market up to get those soybean acres without any real intention of buying additional soybeans? And that's a concern that I have. So for me, I would really like to start seeing these sales happen more aggressively. I'm giving it some leeway because I know it was a holiday week, the Lunar New Year in China. But pretty soon here, Tony, I want to see these follow-up sales. Otherwise, I'm concerned or worried that the market might become disappointed.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
with Agriculture Today. Here's Tony St. James.
What's a little bit different maybe about this cycle than we've seen in other cycles is that due to this government policy relative to Mexico, is this cycle maybe a little bit extended?
Speaking recently at CattleCon 26, Mike Murphy with Cattle Facts.
So when you look at this chart, I've got the red boxes in terms of talking about the downturn of the cycle. That's the blue bars and the red boxes. The green bars, what that is that's really the uptrend of the cycle. And you can see looking at the data, those tend to be 5 years. The uptrend's about 5 years, and Kevin alluded to the downtrend being close to sometimes 7 years. Have we seen a little bit of an adjustment where we don't have quite as much of that risk? And in this measurement, we're looking at first half high of a calf market to second half low. Are we in a spot where if the border stays closed, will we have less risk to the downside in that second half of the year? And I think the answer would be yes. If the border opens up, then we feel like we're going to be more in that scenario where you find with those blue bars, and that'll be a continuation every year where then that calf market will start to find more pressure in the second half of the year. So understanding just where we are from a cyclical standpoint, we may have one more year. This might extend that green bar where maybe we only have a 5 or 6 or 7% price decline in the fall due to the fact that the border stays closed. But boy, looking into the end of the decade, we should expect those bigger drawdowns as you've experienced in those previous cycles. And you start to look at those, and a couple of those, you can have back-to-back-to-back type of years of 10, 15, 20% declines. So just understand that we're maybe not quite there in 26, but as we look into 27 on end of the decade, you're going to have that. And then remember that if we extend this a little bit longer here on the green bars, if you will, for one more year, then now you're looking at likely into, say, 2032 or 2033 potentially where your low end of the calf market would be as you look at it from a historical standpoint. Now, tying this back into bred females, this is a measurement looking at prices from basically kind of October into the early winter, U.S. averages. We believe we're at the peak in terms of that bred female market, whether we're talking about cows, heifers, or pairs, either one. Going forward here, just due to the fact of the profitability at the cow-calf level, some of that kind of slower expansion rate, it is a market that's going to be very well sustained all the way through this next year. And then I think from there, you'll start to see a little bit more of that rollover going into the tail end of the decade. Kevin mentioned the impact that this has on the dairy industry from a cull-cow standpoint, but most of us in the room as beef producers, huge impact on our bottom line. And we do believe this is sustainable. You know, if we can have a 90s lean market that's going to average closer to, say, $4 a pound this year, we're going to be able to have utility cows averaging $1.50, $1.55, pretty comfortably, if you will. So as we wrap things up and turn over to Randy Block, I just want to kind of highlight a couple of things. Don't underestimate the psychology of the market in terms of when the border, in fact, does open. We always have a market, both cash and futures, that's forward-looking. So understand what that could look like. No one's talking about demand that's weak. We're just talking about demand that's being resisted. And we'll see if that plays out, but that is our key assumption as we look at the market outlook for this year in 2026.
It's Agriculture Today.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The whole focus of our event this year is on unleashing American ethanol and unleashing new opportunities for corn growers and this nation's farmers.
Jeff Cooper is CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, previewing the upcoming National Ethanol Conference.
And unfortunately, the pathway to doing that often runs through Washington, D.C. or through state capitals, and is related to policy and regulatory issues. And in many cases, you know, not asking for new policy or a new program, we're asking to remove existing barriers that have been keeping our product from reaching the marketplace. So, you know, heavy focus at the conference this year on what are those solutions for unleashing greater ethanol demand, greater demand for corn, greater value for both commodities. And of course, E15 is a big part of that. We do still hope that we'll have some good news to share on E15 when we get to the conference. And we do have, you know, we do have good news. We got California to finally approve E15. That's a piece of the puzzle. But it goes beyond that. We're going to be talking about, exports and the incredible opportunity that increasing exports has provided to the ethanol industry and by extension, our friends in the corn industry in recent years, and how to build on that momentum and continue growing and expanding those markets. And then we're going to be talking about longer term opportunities, sustainable aviation fuel, certainly, but also maritime fuel. And we see an incredible opportunity and huge role that ethanol can play in reducing carbon emissions from the maritime sector. You know, globally, that sector consumes 80 billion gallons of fuel a year. So there are some big opportunities, big new market potential on the horizon, but a lot of those things are longer term. So, you know, we're going to be focused on those, but also what can be done in the short term to really give that shot in the arm that we're talking about. And that's all E15. So we're going to be looking at other ways to get this done. And, you know, we saw a couple of years ago that eight governors in the Midwest said, hey, if Congress can't get this done, we're going to figure out ways that we can get this done. And, you know, so maybe we go back to that strategy where states are opting out of the 1 pound RVP waiver for E10 to force the marketplace to deliver the proper gasoline blend stock for year round E15 blending. And we'll be, you know, considering other creative solutions to get us there. But, you know, in addition to the issues I talked about, we're also going to be, of course, as we always do at the NEC, bringing in outside experts to help us understand broader trends that are happening at the global level and at the national level in kind of the larger energy sector. But also, you know, we're going to have a keynote speaker on AI and what the rapid emergence of artificial intelligence means, not just for our national security and our energy security and kind of geopolitical issues, but what does it mean for our businesses in the ethanol industry? So those are the sorts of issues we're going to be covering this year. I'm really looking forward to it as always. And, it's just, you know, the best event of the year to get everybody in the industry together, get them recharged, get them ready for the battles that we know are coming in the year ahead. And, you know, just get caught up. So we're looking forward to the event in Orlando and certainly looking forward to the nicer weather that we're expecting down there.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
And possibly a beef trading partner. I mean, we do buy beef from them, but, you know, their production is really ramped up on the beef side, mainly because they were doing a lot of business with China, but now that's kind of slowed down. So they have, I think, a bit more export capacity, and that could potentially be or go a long way into sort of soothing our tight supply scenario that we have in the United States.
Ted Seifert is vice president of Zahner Ag Hedge, says when it comes to Brazil, they're both competition and a partner.
If nothing else, it offers export competition. Now, I know that we say a lot of the time, we like to say that, you know, for us, beef is a domestic market. Yes, we have some exports, but it's a small drop in the bucket compared to what we consume. We are beef eaters, Tony, and they are too. Something I would also like to point out is it's a different kind of beef. You know, we spend a lot of time visiting cattle ranches, or there's a lot of farms in Brazil that are integrated where they have a lot of corn and cattle, and they'll have an ethanol plant down the street that they're taking the corn to bring the DDGs back, right? And everything walks off the farm. Their beef is, I think, a lot tougher. That's just, I mean, I ate a lot of beef while in Brazil. It's a bit of a different style than the beef that we're used to. So I do really kind of wonder how their beef fits into our supply chain in a grander scale. But yes, they have the capacity to be stronger exporters, whether it's to us or to other places in the world. And that is a concern for us, right? I mean, so on one hand, I want to say from a corn standpoint, it's great that they're using more corn domestically because their domestic growth in corn for both ethanol and for feed for animals kind of keeps some of that off the export market. But at the same time, it creates export opportunities for them on the beef side.
Well, Seifert also says even though most eyes have been on the cattle market, the big story as of late, hogs.
Hogs have been the story here as of late, and it's been a pretty sizable correction now off of those highs. From a technical standpoint, you know, we very much looked like we had a bit of a topping formation. And so I think a lot of this is technically based. You had a very large fund position in the hogs market. And there's been some profit taking, and, you know, maybe as you break some of these technical barriers, that gives them more reason to get out. So there has been that pretty steep drop off. In the meantime, you look at the cattle market and, you know, from a zoom out perspective, sure, we've had our days where we've had some rather volatile trade based on news, but really we've kind of flatlined and we're up. We're near the highs. I mean, we're not right at the highs, Tony, but we're not far off the highs. But, you know, if you look at the last few months, it's been rather sideways. Basically, to me, that's suggesting that we haven't really had any fundamental changes for this market since November or so. You know, go back to the time when we were having weekly conversations about reopening the border and when we had an administration talking about lowering beef prices. We haven't heard much of that since then. So you have a market that I think has kind of found that fair value in the cattle complex and just sort of waiting for the next big news story. Domestic demand has been solid. It's really not been wavering at these higher prices. Supply situation is tight, but that's been the same situation for a couple of years now. And so we're just waiting to know what the next big thing is going to be for that cattle market. And in the meantime, again, it's been a range and it's been mostly sideways.
Ted Seifert, Zahner Ag Hedge. It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Demet, Texas. And we have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
with Agriculture Today. Here's Tony St. James.
So our vision, yes, you can see that this year we've got it down a little bit. We think the dairy cow slaughter will pick up. Cows we've kept for an extra turn, extra calf, because the value of the calf. At some point, they've got to refresh in that herd. But the long-term trend, we would suggest, will continue to be stronger as we think about the dairy cow herd.
Kevin Good with Cattle Facts, speaking recently at CattleCon 26.
We continue to lean heavier and heavier on that calf as far as fed beef production. Here you can see it was almost 20% this past year as far as a cow going through the feed yard or either dairy or dairy beef cross. So we would suggest, from a big picture standpoint, if you've got a beef cow herd that, yep, it's a cycle, but it's trending lower over time, you've got a dairy cow herd that has a tendency to trend higher, just recognize that we will continue to lean on the dairy industry more and more heavily over time for beef production. With that said, let's build a supply forecast for the next couple of years. We'll start out with the calf crop. That, this past year, was down considerably. We would suggest you've got a dairy cow herd that's larger. You've got beef heifer replacement number that's somewhat larger. You've got a cow herd that was stated, beef cow herd that was stated that's lower. So you net that out. Basically, you got an even herd starting 26. We would suggest we'll continue to see the same trend, getting more out of the dairy industry, less calf harvesting for veal, more beef on dairy cross. They're not keeping the heifers back. Those would suggest that the calf crop this year should be as big as it was last year. So with that said, still tight supplies as you start building the watch for 27. Particular, it would suggest that, you know, domestically our supplies will remain tight this year and again next year. But the real kicker is what takes place with Mexico. And obviously that's a big question mark, isn't it? If we look in the rearview mirror this past year in 25, we placed 1.5 million head less cattle on feed. Of that, obviously about a million head of that drop was from Mexico. So with that said, the long-term average is about 1.15. We are suggesting, whenever the border reopens, the 12-month period after that, that 1 to 1.2 million head is the right number. We get it. They're building some feed yards, back in capacity in Mexico. We get it. There's less cattle that coming in from Central America into Mexico. But the bottom line is the cattle are worth a heck of a lot more here than they are there. So whenever the border does reopen, we would anticipate more cattle coming in. Our premise is the border opens at some point, late spring, summer of this year. If that's the case, you have more cattle in the system that potentially could come out starting the fourth quarter, but more so in 27. So obviously, the longer the border stays closed, the tighter supplies will stay. But let's keep this in mind. Whenever it does open, automatically you will have bigger fed supplies as you move 6, 9, 12 months down the road. So keep that in mind as we build the forecast. That's where we're at. With that said, cattle on feed numbers starting Jan 1, this is all size of feed yards. You can see it's down about 500,000 head. You can also see it's tremendously bigger than it was the last cycle low. So what gives? Big part of what gives is we're feeding cattle a heck of a lot longer, aren't we? So if you think about that trend, we're paid on pounds, cost a gain, compared to the value of fed cattle, we get it. We'll continue to feed cattle longer and longer. So even though your on-feed number appears to be somewhat elevated from a cycle standpoint compared to 12 years ago, it's still, from a harvest rate standpoint, is very similar.
It's Agriculture Today.
This land, there's no more perfect place on earth. It provides more than the crop you grow or the herd you tend. It gives you purpose. And to help young, beginning, and small farmers fulfill their purpose, Capital Farm Credit is here for you. Our decades of experience providing advice, products, and opportunities can help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.